exit the donut.
Okay, guys, welcome to the second of Exit the Donut. We actually have an official name now. We'll call it an Exit the Donut podcast, talking about everything all superhero-related. Obviously, today's installment is going to be very much talking about the new X-Men movie, Days of the Future Past, and then we'll also segue into a couple of other future movies. We got a lot of things we want to talk about for the new Batman vs. Superman movie. That has a title, also has a pretty good look for some people. And we'll talk about some of the new television shows that we're planning out in the fall. So cue the music, Mike. I'm dying for this. All day.
Ah, there we go. Maybe we should segue in with the music next time. So.
I like it. Very, very nice, guys. All right, so first of all, again, my name is Richie. Welcome to Exit the Podcast. The other two joining us today is going to be Mike. And we also have Amy over here. And let's just go right into it. So the movie is called X-Men, Days of the Future Past. In it, I would basically...
I don't want your future!
Exactly. God almighty. It's exactly what it's like. Call it the uniting of all X-Men franchises. You know, it's based on the Uncanny X-Men issues, numbers 141 and 142. And ironically, that one took place, their present time was actually 1980. So for them, it was actually going back maybe 10 years of that, maybe like 7 years. And the future to them was the year 2013. So it sounds like the X-Men actually succeeded because I don't see any Sentinels going around or anything like that. So in it, basically, the movie Wolverine's mutant ability for healing allows him to have his mind, survive a lot of travel back through time to find Professor X and try to persuade him and Magneto to stop Mystique from killing Trask and hopefully prevent a terrible future. So, of course, in the end, Wolverine is the only one who retains his memory, and everyone is back in this one. So let's go ahead and start with Amy this time. Amy, why don't you give me some overall impressions of the movie from your view? Just overall, nothing too detailed yet.
I thought it was a fun movie. There was a lot of good humor in it. There were a few small continuity issues that I had with it, not from the comic side, because I don't know the backstory, but just from the movies and stuff like that, things that were that weren't explained that I would have liked a little bit, but overall I thought it was really good. I thought the plot moved along really well, and they did a good job with some of the things that I was worried about, so.
All right, Mike? Yeah,
I really liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was very entertaining. I was surprised, I think, by how much of the previews of the future was from the very beginning of the movie. I thought it was entertaining. I agree with Amy. The continuity was probably pretty good overall, but it was trying to tie so much together that there were some pretty big holes, I thought. I thought the past stuff, the 1973 stuff, was really well done. The future stuff, I thought, was more of like a bookend to the story than part of the core part of the story. I understand why it was there and it made sense and all that, but it just wasn't as well fleshed out, I didn't think. It was fun. It was good. I thought everybody, for the most part, performed well. It was entertaining.
Yeah, we'll definitely kind of talk about that. And Mike, continuity is actually going to be a big thing, especially when we talk about these franchises and what, you know, when you have like the two other studios, Fox and Sony, trying to keep their relative franchises, you know, what can you do to kind of keep the story interesting? Because they have quite a bit of stuff to kind of wrap up. And then, you know, so the continuity, I think, is a huge element, especially when it comes to comic book types of movies. And then, you know, the original comic actually does do what the movie does, where it actually kind of goes back, kind of has like these nice little headers that tell you like when you're back in 1980 and when you're back into 2013. So that's kind of following in faithful. So, you know, overall I would say that it's probably the best out of all the X-Men movies, but again, for me it's a love-hate relationship when it comes to the X-Men movies, because, you know, X-Men was like the first comic I ever got into. I was at that point where Jim Lee, as an artist, was really, really coming into his own. X-Men were so huge, they actually had to split into two comics. You had Uncanny X-Men, led by Storm's team, and have a Colossus, an Archangel, and other people. And then you have the X-Men Blue team, which had Cyclops and Gambit and Wolverine, obviously all from our A-list. So it was actually kind of cool to see them trying to kind of fuse everyone together. So I felt, we'll kind of talk about like issues, but we'll kind of like go into, we'll try and follow like, at least the original formula. So Mike, let's go ahead and talk about star power of this movie. So I've said probably more than anything, if Spider-Man relies more on the acting, then this movie relies more on star power. So did you think the combination of actors worked? Did you like the, did you feel there's a particular emphasis on certain characters versus everyone, or was it a pretty good ensemble cast?
It was strange because there's so many actors in this movie and there's so many characters. Avengers is famous for being the one that was able to finally get it right by having all these big groups in there, but there were at least twice as many sort of big stars in this than there are in Avengers.
Sure.
I think they did a good job. What I thought was really clear is that the cast, I don't know if it's the story or if it was the actors, I think it's working like gold. For the 1973 cast, that X-Men First Class cast, they're just better. They're just better actors. They drag you along better. And I'm a Lord of the Rings guy, so Ian McKellen, Gandalf, is part of the older cast, the older Magneto, but they're just not as strong. But the star power is certainly there. Halle Berry's in the movie more than I expected her to be, even though she's not in it that much. Ellen Page as Kitty Pryde finally got something to do. She didn't have a lot to do, if my mind serves me correctly, in the first original trilogy. And she had, of the future people, she had the most to do. And then you've got Hugh Jackman, who's a huge, enormous star. Michael Fassbender, I think, is becoming as big a star as there is. Obviously Jennifer Lawrence, with the Hunger Games and now this, have two pretty huge franchises. So you have a lot of personality that, as you pointed out, doesn't really exist in the Spider-Man world. Andrew Garfield it's probably a stretch to call him a movie star. And Emma Stone, I think, is becoming one, but she wasn't certainly when she got the part. In the Marvel universe, Samuel L. Jackson is a pretty big star, but really none of the other heads of the main six Avengers had real significant star power coming into it. Robert Downey Jr. maybe to some extent, but he's
because of the first Iron Man,
mostly because of Iron Man. Whereas with the X-Men, with the exception of Hugh Jackman, who really made his career with Wolverine,
sure.
People are known more for the stuff outside. I mean, certainly Patrick Stewart is a pretty huge movie star. He's like, about as big as they come. And I think it works in this case. It's nice to see your favorite, nerd movie star people all together in this stuff. They did the costumes nicely. I thought in both cases they didn't overdo it, but there was some costuming. But you still see the star themselves and. And it worked for me. It was a nice balance. It is very different, as you point out, though, than how Marvel does things. Marvel casts Chris Hemsworth, who no one ever has heard of as Thor. That doesn't happen in these movies. With the exception maybe of Beast in the older cast, everybody. James McAvoy is not a huge star, but he's pretty big compared to maybe where Chris Hemsworth was when he got Thor.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely give that to you. I think that maybe the X-Men movies, they probably should have gone in the opposite direction, and to a degree they tried to do that. I'll kind of go into that a little bit. Amy, I noticed that you put a post on, and you actually did one of the really, really smart things, which was actually go back and watch some of the previous X-Men movies. Did you start with just First Class, or did you start off with all of them?
No, I am currently house-sitting, so I don't. I have them all. I've seen them all. They were showing X-Men the third one, and they showed First Class. So those are the only two I caught. But I've seen X2 probably more than any of them because that was always my favorite. And like I said, that three is where I had the biggest continuity issues, anyways, because the whole Patrick Stewart thing. Professor, be dead. you know, how do they reconcile that and bring him back? And I had never seen the post-credit, evidently. I found out now there's a post-credit where, you know, he's trained, or his, whatever, consciousness is put into a guy that's in a coma or something like that. In the
post-credit,
right. That way, which I had never seen.
Wait. There's a post-credit scene for X-Men Last Stand?
Yeah.
You just found out about this last night while you were... I haven't seen it, but I just read about it.
Yeah, it's a pretty silly scene. You know, for those who haven't seen it before, it's not that big of a spoiler. At the end of X-Men The Last Stand, you see the character of Moira MacTaggert, which is actually one of the big, big love influence, you know, loves of Professor X's, and you kind of see her, and you don't really see the body, but you hear Patrick Stewart's voice, and all of a sudden, she kind of looks kind of panned off the camera and goes, "Charles?" You know, like, it's so obvious that it's him. So, Mike, I'm surprised that you missed that. Let's go ahead. So, X-Men First Class was one you finished. So, and I want to hear your opinion about this. So, Amy, tell me, like, you know, why does it work so much with Michael Fassbender and James McAvoy?
You know, I think kind of like what Mike said, I think they're just, the dynamics of the two is so much better. They play off each other so well. I mean, Matt's great. I've seen him in other things, and he's just, I think he's phenomenal. Fassbender, I haven't seen as much except for in this and then now 12 Years a Slave, but again, world class. They're just amazing, their dynamics. And I think that even though you have Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, who are great actors as well, there's not that passion in them as older men. I don't feel that passion that they do. And I get also that they're younger and they were much more in tune with what they believed at the time. And so, you know, there's a reason they're much more emotional, but I love their characters and the portrayal of them. And I just like the, I like that group as well better. I'm not, you know, I don't know, Mystique for me though was a little flat in this one. I don't know why, but I didn't think that, I don't know. I wasn't real sold on her, and I know she. I think this is her. Is this her last one, or she's got one more?
Jennifer Lawrence, or the character?
Jennifer, the portrayal. Yeah. I mean, I thought that the effects were great. When she was kicking ass, that was great. You know, she looked great in the costume, but her acting for me in this was not. You know, and I love her in Catching Fire and Hunger Games. I thought she was much better in those. For me, but I love Quicksilver. I thought he was in this. He was probably my favorite actual portrayal. So
what a welcomed to me. It really is a diversion in the middle of like this pretty tense moment. Do they go to this, you know, juxtapose like little thing, especially with the music piece that they played?
Oh my God, it was great. That was probably my favorite part of the whole movie.
Like, my theater just started snickering and laughing as soon as, like, the music they got on. Like, it kind of told, you know, it's sometimes hard to kind of gauge these movies, you know, what's your ultimate goal? You know, Mike was just talking about, the star power, and it's so ironic that you see, like, all these really, really unknowns, but my goodness, is it the writing? Is it the combination of the actors? Is it the directors that makes Marvel so much more appealing, you know, because X-Men, you know, really should have started out, again, it's an ensemble piece, and you could have kind of split to kind of find out each, you know, each character is actually, the movie X-Men Origins with Wolverine, there's supposed to be a couple more spin-offs. One was actually supposed to be about Magneto. You know, Michael Fassbender, I don't think people realize his range of acting. I went through his IMDb. I forgot that he was in the movie 300.
Yes.
Playing like one of like, you know, and then you see, so you kind of like see like how great his acting is. He was in Prometheus, obviously. I thought that he, you know, it's, I don't know if I can necessarily, I didn't think maybe the casting of Ian McKellen was such a great idea for Magneto. Patrick Stewart in everyone's head was always going to be Professor X. You know, I mean, that, hello, it's like bald guy, you know, who just has like that right voice, you know. I think we've always known Eric Lyncher maybe to be slightly younger than Professor X, and it kind of shows, but, you know, I thought the acting was superb. If you know, comparing it to Spider-Man, if you had a relationship between two people, I think James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender did a really, really good job conveying their history together more than Patrick and Ian did, especially in that scene in the airplane.
That was great, yeah.
Which kind of brings the chess table, you know, that's a very, very, you know, that's a very, I think, significant thing that kind of talks about, a chess is a perfect metaphor for their relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's supposed to be, you know, mutually respective, but the point is that you want to beat the other person, and it's calculating. And so and then the raw emotions that kind of came in, so, you know, I thought the cast was really, really good. So, you know, Mike, yeah, you know, talking about some of the other characters, you know, there was Ellen Page was kind of put in more as an homage. Again, for the comic, it's actually Kitty Pryde's character that actually gets sent back from the future into the past to be able to talk to her, like, herself. So I think that was more of an homage, because that kind of confused me, because I actually thought having Ellen Page in the movie as that character, she's not necessarily a person who can hold the scene, but she's certainly a person who can be used as a person to maybe relate for the audience as to what's going on. I think Ellen Page has enough of that, you know, command in, like, her scene to kind of be, like, innocent and, like, oh, what's going on if she's going into her younger self. Halle Berry, there are a couple of actors who are unused. Halle Berry for, like, 2 seconds. Poor Colossus, again, has, like, one line. I know why Colossus is in it. You know, he says, like, his one line, and then he just gets torn up, like you wouldn't believe. So I think the cast works. I think it's wrong to use Wolverine again. And Mystique is actually on point. Like, it's actually her and the Brotherhood who are actually... So for those who don't know out there, and, like, I don't know if this makes any difference for you, in the original comic, it's not Trask who gets assassinated. It's actually Senator Robert Kelly is the senator. And because of that act, do they go forward with the Sentinel program? Again, it's Kitty Pryde going back, who goes back instead of Wolverine. And, gosh, what other one? And then it's Mystique and her Brotherhood, who are basically, like, the main antagonists in this. So it kind of skews the storyline a little bit. Let's see here. You know, now, Mike, let's go to you on this one. You know, does the plot work? Is there enough exposition both? You know, in these movies, you tend to have stuff before, during, and you want to see where they're going because it's so obvious that they're going to make, like, future movies. So, right. To you, did it flow good? You know, were there a couple, like, little bumps along the way?
Yeah, it was okay. Again, the future stuff I didn't think was particularly well fleshed out. Mm-hmm. Just sort of accept that this is going on, and they don't really show you how you got there, like, kind of at all. But, you know, if I can accept, mm-hmm. for instance, that a dude has these claws coming out of his hands, I can accept that Kitty Pryde has some weird, you know, brain consciousness dimensional thing.
I don't get where she got but, that. No, like,
yeah, well, right. To me, there were, like, the plot, so, you know, I had a real problem with Godzilla, for instance, in that a lot of the character choices didn't make any sense. They were designed specifically to get you from point A to point B for the movie. Sure. They wanted a disaster over here with people involved, right? I didn't think there was a lot of that with this. I thought, for the most part, the character actions made some sense. You know, I think, I thought that the, you know, sort of drug addiction storyline with Xavier,
right.
I thought that was really good. I thought it showed, you know, growth and character development and you know, humanity in them in a way that you haven't seen in some of the other movies. That worked for me.
Uh-huh.
I think that the one moment that I had some trouble with from a story perspective was, I mean, number one, I thought the first generation Sentinels, which are shown at the end of the movie and the sort of the climax scene, seemed way too advanced for the time period. I don't know how you get to that as your Gen 1. But more than that, there's a moment in that scene where Xavier is trying to control Mystique, right? And I get why he's trying to do that, but there were other simpler choices for him to make, like, for instance, trying to control the president, and changing what the president's going to say. You know, and other things that, that maybe would have made the system, made it work a little bit easier. I thought the story worked nicely in the 1973 timeline. I think it's pretty clear where they're going from here. I mean, I know that they're playing.
Do you really think it's actually, because let me ask you this. Here's probably something that, if Iron Man and the other movies try to take things like Afghanistan as far as like locations, what did you think about them integrating historical perspectives by like putting Nixon, you know, like in a such an integral part, not like a fake president like in the comics? Or what about the JFK references, which I thought was
cool.
I actually thought that was very cool. I thought that was neat that they kind of integrated that in.
Yeah, I thought they were like kind of dissing him, like, oh, okay, it's Magneto that curved the bullet. And then that was kind of neat, you know, when they were like, well, it's actually trying to save his life, and they're like, why? But like, well, he's a, right?
Yeah.
And Amy, let's go ahead and talk about, you know, like, while we're on the subject of trying to integrate, like, real stuff, you know, we talked about continuity before, which is such an integral part. Now, let me tell you about one of my major, major bad ones, I think. If anyone watched X-Men The Last Stand, Mr. Trask is already in that movie, played by a guy named Bill Duke.
Yeah,
by the way,
that guy.
Who's tall, bald, and black. In this movie, I got short, white boy with a shaggy hair and a big old mustache. All right, and that's what I mean by star power. I mean, my God, I go, obviously, you know, I'm waiting for him to basically, you know, like, after he, like, sends, like, the Sentinels, I'm waiting for him to be, like, the Lannisters send their, you know, like, something, like, kind of, like, you know, along those lines. I felt that Peter Dinklage is absolutely wasted in this movie because, you know, the character of Trask, you know, If he died in the 1970s, well then who the hell went, you know, originally to get them to the future? Well then who went on with the program?
Right.
You know, like who was the genius behind it all who kept these Sentinels? And Mike, you know, that's something to talk about too. It's like these Sentinels were way advanced, but where's the in between? You went from those ones with the with the Gatling guns and then the future like shape-shifting ones. You're telling me that nowhere in between any of the first, second, third, you know, movies with the Wolverines, they couldn't have thrown in a Sentinel somewhere? At least to get them, you know, like all of a sudden, like Sentinel's such a big issue.
Yeah.
You don't hear from them, and all of a sudden, like in the future, they're the most terrible thing on the planet. Like, where were they? And then the other, God, I feel like I'm like jumping all over the place on this one. And then even for the character of Trask, you know, originally it's supposed to be Senator Kelly, but you know, we really don't know what Trask's, you know, his motivation. For why he even wants to even do this in the program. And in the comics, his dad and his kids are actually mutants. And I thought that would have been fantastic. You know, sure, I'll suspend the whole entire, hey, you shrunk, you turned white, and you had hair now. You know, I'll go ahead and take, like, that one, you know. But, you know, that's a huge one. Can you guys comment on those continuities, or were there any other things that bothered you at all?
Yeah.
Amy, go first, please.
The only other one that I've and I didn't really pick up too much on it until I kind of started reading into it, and then I'm like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Like, in the original trilogy, you know, Mystique and Magneto have a very close relationship, and they're, you know, it's the two of them, you know, against Professor X, and there's no mention of their history. Whereas in the first class in this one, you know, it all started with Raven and Professor X, and they grew up together, but there's no mention of that in the first trilogy.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so that's another thing for me. Now, I really like the dynamic of the three-way, the triangle of those three actors. So I'm okay with that story arc, but it makes you wonder, well, why wasn't there ever anything there? You know, especially as much as he's torn up by losing Mystique. You know, it just Professor X would have never mentioned it in the first trilogy. So that was the only other, you know, continuity thing that, you know, kind of makes you wonder, well. But then at the same time, when you're working on these franchises, I mean, I totally understand that they have to change things up and keep it fresh and relevant, and, you know, they're trying to reach, you know, the fans, but also new fans. So, I mean, I get it that you can't always, it's not going to be perfect, but that was probably the only other one that I, you know, that stood out for me.
Yeah, you know, again, it's, I think it's Jennifer Lawrence as a, you know, she's a pretty cool girl. Mm-hmm. You know, she's supposed to be anti-Hollywood, you know, like in the establishment, like whatnot, but she's, you know, certainly I don't recall in the comics such an interaction between Professor X and Mystique, and maybe you need that.
I think it's a you know, business reality issue too. She's a pretty big star, and her star is on the rise. So if they don't make her a centerpiece,
yeah,
they're gonna lose her. And I know that there's some discussion about there being a Mystique spinoff movie, which I agree with.
God, seriously.
Based on the performance and what they gave her to do, and I agree with you about Peter Dinklage as well. They were good. They were plenty fun. They did a good job in their roles, I thought, for the most part. But they were given less area for a character arc than maybe I would have preferred. For me, the continuity issues are, I mean, there's certainly a lot of them, but they're trying to tie together with six movies. They basically ignored the Wolverine, which made the one from last year, which maybe is fine. I didn't really see a lot of tie-in. Maybe I missed it.
Did you see last year's The Wolverine? Did you see
it? Yeah, I liked it. It was very sort of, you know, solo. But I thought it was good. For me, this is part of the issue with these sort of integrated worlds is what do you do when you make it, when you have a new idea that sort of changes what would have happened in a previous movie? And for me, I'd rather have a story that I like and that works than have the integration be perfect. You see this a little bit with The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. There's a little bit of discontinuity. There's some, you know, Gandalf doesn't trust Saruman so much, and that doesn't make a lot of sense based on where the first, you know, Fellowship of the Ring starts. And so I'm fine with that, but I agree that there was quite a bit of it. Certainly, if I didn't realize that Professor X was alive, like the vast majority of moviegoers are not, because I'm more in tune than most, although not certainly as tune as some. And there were some other continuity issues that I, you know, didn't understand.
Any at the top of your head?
Well, like for instance, he loses his adamantium claws at the end of the Wolverine, the one from last year. But when he's laying on
Yes. He doesn't lose the adamantium.
He loses the claws. They cut his claws off, the adamantium claws off.
And I thought you were talking about the metal.
At the end of the Wolverine, his bone claws. And then when he's on the slab in the future world, he's got adamantium claws. I don't understand why, because they never explain it. Just like they never explain why. I think Storm died in The Last Stand, didn't she? I mean, basically everybody dies.
I don't recall that, because I think she's actually at the funeral of Professor X.
Pride lives, and Iceman lives.
He's kind of like left to be like the head miss, you know, master.
Okay. Right. No, you're right.
And that's another thing too. So
but it's confusing, and if I'm confused, then you know a lot of other people might be too. But I can accept it as long as we're going to get a good story. I thought for the most part it was a good story, and they're trying to reset everything. I'm not sure. I mean, I understand they're going to do Apocalypse next, which I think is going to be set in the 80s.
Yeah.
So I assume it's going to be the first class cast as opposed to the original trilogy cast, which.
Yeah.
Is what seems like that's what they were setting up at the end of this movie, so I'm a little confused by that.
All right, let's go ahead and talk about real quick. So, and then I want to talk about a plot point that
please explain to me what the hell the end credit scene was with the guys.
Okay. Hold that thought. Write that down, please, because we'll get to that in a second. So, let me go ahead and just say this: that obviously the Marvel Cinematic Universe shows that you don't have if you've got a good director. And you've got a good script, and you've got good surrounding actors, you don't need, like, a Jennifer Lawrence or another one to drive and propel your movie. You just don't need it.
I think it's a distraction.
Absolutely. If anything, with Chris Evans, I was so upset when, like, man, I saw, like, him as, how is Johnny Storm going to work as Captain America? But he's enough, you know, he's got... not enough star power, but man, you know, I'm really immersed in his ability to be Captain America, and I can really kind of follow like long. So that's my comment about that. Here's another continuity error for me. So, God, I want to see if I can get this right. So if Jean Grey, right, dies in the end of Last Stand, right?
Yeah.
Cyclops and Professor X. And first of all, by the way, let's talk about that just for a split second. I met Brett Ratner, the director of the third movie. And that guy gets so much grief online for, like, just ruining the X-Men franchise.
Hold up. Did you get a preview of Hercules in your showing?
Yes.
Does that not look terrible?
I think it's about putting a star.
Yeah.
But that's Brett Ratner too.
Hey, I didn't sit there and say that he was an awesome, you know. The guy, for what he's just given, just does. I mean, look, to me, Brett Ratner is Rush Hour. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that's, like, he actually, that's for another podcast. I won't tell you something, but anyway, but, you know, Brett Ratner was given the helm of doing X-Men The Last Stand 6 weeks prior because they had the deadline, and this is the problem, is that to hold on to the franchise, they need to start filming to meet their date so they could do all the special effects. You know, they had to keep the story. So he really didn't have any input into the story. It was just kind of like whatever the studio thought that would have been awesome. So terrible, terrible movie. So Jean Grey is dead, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Wolverine's all like, oh, my God, timeline, he goes to Japan, right? And at the end of that movie, Professor X shows up. We don't know where he got back from. Apparently that's his twin brother, whose body, but then Magneto's hanging out?
Yeah.
I thought Magneto was in jail. Like, how did he get out from even, like, the third movie? And then if Jean Grey's back, as we saw at the end of the movie, and spoilers, sorry for whoever's, like, watching this, so Jean Grey's back, then why did Wolverine ever have to leave to go to Japan? Like, I'm so, like, lost on, like, I just don't know, like, where, I don't know if that, like, shouted out at you guys, but, like, I'm not, you know, like, the timeline, and are we on a different?
I think, like, it's one of those things you have to kind of almost, they've gotten to the franchise has gotten to the point where you have to almost critique each one individually, and you have to kind of throw out the old, because there's going to be so much of that. The other thing that, I can't even remember now what track I was going down, but yeah, I saw that too, and because we were talking about that at the end too, we're like, okay, so, and then Rogue walks out, because we had this conversation.
Oh God, Rogue's back! I'm like, come on!
And so I said to Mike, I said, okay, well here's my thing, and he did have a good argument, and I'll let him share that, but my whole thing was, you see her take Iceman's hand, so I'm like, okay, so she took the cure still, because she can touch him. I'm like, so if the Sentinels are not a problem, why would there ever be a need for the cure? Because now the humans are on the mutant side, so now there's no need for a cure because we're not trying to kill the mutants or cure the mutants. But he did have a good argument. I'll let him share what he said.
Let me give you the knowledge, right? Okay. So here's why. So the premise of the movie is that there was a timeline that existed where Jean Grey died and Rogue with the stuff and Professor X there's an issue with, but still, right? But then when Wolverine gets sent back, he only at the end, when he fails miserably, but James McAvoy is able to, but Professor X is able to convince Raven / Mystique that she shouldn't do this thing, then that changes everything, and that creates a new future,
right,
that these things happen. And so what I told Amy was, you can imprint anything you would like on that new future, including that in some way Professor X has taught Rogue how to control her special ability.
Oh,
yes!
so that she can both hold hands with Iceman and kill everybody.
Don't be mad. I thought they had a great opportunity to just really reset everything. And then they pigeonhole themselves again. They're, they put Cyclops back in with Jean Grey. I'm like, you could have done anything you wanted to. You know what would have been a really, really cool thing is if they, maybe at the end of that one, you know, maybe after the end of this movie, he meets Cyclops and Jean Grey, you know, at the same time, and then you have Beast who's already there. And then the original five X-Men in the comic book was Cyclops, Jean Grey, Beast, Angel, who was in the third movie, even though he's younger, so I don't know how they were going to do that. And then you also have Iceman. So that's a problem, that they took these characters for the sake of characters, and, you know, now they're going to, if those two were to join, Angel and Iceman, they'd be like kids, like the original one. But then, here's a big one. I encourage you guys, if you guys ever get a chance, like, Google it. I want you to see how big Cyclops is in X-Men universe. He's reduced to nothing, basically, in these movies, you know, with James Marsden, I believe, is the guy who plays him. And he is like, Professor X's protege. If anything, you know, they gave the relationship that Cyclops and Professor X has to Wolverine, which I think is an awful idea. I get it, but Wolverine should never have been...
Well, but it goes back to what you're talking about the star power. They have a superstar in Hugh Jackman.
But only because of the first one.
With his role, that's what they're going to build everything around. I totally agree with you. I don't know the comics anywhere near as well as you do, and I don't know X-Men that well at all because it's not one of my son's favorite ones to read. But there are tons of really interesting mutants that they could do interesting things with, and they could create interesting dynamics and plots, but it seems like it's always the humans versus the X-Men, and I don't know if that's the way it always is in the comics, but more interesting stories, and they have not to this point done that at all.
Yeah, certainly there is a lot of potential, but again, I think they just pigeonholed themselves. So, all right, guys, let's go ahead and talk about that post-credits scene. So,
pyramids!
Oh, God. Hidden Suba! So, Amy, I tend to think of you more as, like, the, you know, coming into this stuff, like, kind of fresh. Did you get it? Did you, anything that was, you know, or did you not get it, or, like, what did it tell you? Like, just your thoughts alone, like, before, like, not knowing anything, like, what'd you think?
You know, I'm completely blanking on what was the post credit.
Evidently. The hood, and he's putting together the pyramid.
Oh, right. He's putting the pyramid. Oh, okay.
And then in the background, you see what? Once they kind of angle the shot. Like, if he's going, like, if this is him. Then the camera kind of pans this way.
Right.
You see, like, these things, like, in the background, like, right over here. Did you see that?
Oh, no.
Okay.
There's four horsemen, right?
Correct.
Oh, so the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
Right. So a play on words, right? It's the apocalypse, and here's the four horsemen. So, Mike, you said you can explain that just a little bit.
Well, I don't know anything about any of this. I know that they're working on a movie called X-Men Apocalypse.
Right. So a lot of people thought that,
I guess it's based on some really famous and well-done comic book series. But again, as you say, they kind of bastardized the stories anyway.
It's kind of – so Apocalypse is actually the name of a character. Yeah, so it's kind of like – it's kind of funny because a lot of people, when they were leaving my movie, were kind of like, oh, now they're going to go really, really back far in time. To, like, Egyptian times. Like, that's where everyone's like, oh, that's awesome that they're going to do that. I'm like, no. I'm like, you guys have, like, you're an idiot. the name of the character is En-Sabah Nor. That's actually the chant that they were saying. And Apocalypse is basically, like, this mutant who is, I think if I'm reading the history correctly, I think he is the first mutant. Like, he's basically, like, he can't die, like, he's immortal, but he has to rest for, like, certain periods of time, but he is probably one of the X-Men's, like, probably, like, biggest foes, so we don't really know what the extent of his power is, but he can basically control, like, anything on a molecule-like level or anything like that, whether it's his body or whether it's, like, other objects, obviously, like, the pyramid coming together, and the four horsemen are actually mutants, and it's supposed to be war, pestilence, famine, and then death. I mean, that sounds like a good formula for, like...
fun.
And death is actually supposed to be the character of Angel, who was poorly used in The Last Stand. Cool that they put him in here. Terrible that he spent the entire movie flying back between toasts. But he actually gets his wings, like, kind of, like, horrifically destroyed. And Apocalypse basically gives him back, like, metal versions of his wings, and he becomes a character of Archangel. So that's where the end of the movie was. And, you know, I think that was really more for... I wish they would have, you know, done a little bit more. You know, the X-Men and the Spider ones tend to leave you more confused than the Marvel ones do. I think there's clearly a state where Marvel's going, like, you know, with every single one of their end stuff, it's pretty good, I think. So any questions about that, guys, before we move on to the next one? So we're going to kind of wrap this up here real quick. So
I have a question for both of you.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I liked last night watching it was that they introduced some new mutants that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
So is there a mutant that you saw that you would like, which one would you like to see brought back that maybe hadn't been? Because I really like Blink. I had to look up her name because I didn't know. The one who was able to, like, create the, like, portals, basically, and you could warp through into a different space. I thought that was very cool. I'd love to see her in the next one. Because I just thought that was a cool character. But
I don't know if Bishop was in any of the other movies, but
I'd never seen him.
I thought he was pretty cool. I mean, for me, Quicksilver almost stole the whole movie.
Yes.
Absolutely.
But he was in another one before, too. So he was,
I don't know if he was in any other ones, but the interpretation of how they used him was so perfect in every way, and it was such a great moment, that whole sequence with him. I want more.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in First Class, but he did not have a big role.
Correct. I would, you know, the character of Blink, I think, is, there was a comic that came out that was called, you know, Blink originally was actually kind of saved in the comic. She was kind of like a one-off character. But her mutant power was very, very interesting. And I forgot what the name of the comic series was, but she had a great one where it would basically be like six mutants basically pulled out of time. I think they were all about to die or whatever. So they're basically like six slots. And every single time that they do something on one world, like, it's almost like a quantum leap, right, to, like, set the things, like, good. You know, once they do something on one planet, they teleport through Blink's powers to another world, and either they're all there, or one of the characters gets taken out, and basically another character from any other continuity gets replaced by them. So I think that character is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if I would see any of the other characters come back. I would like to see a bunch of roles maybe recast. I think you could recast Kitty Pryde, Colossus, Jean Grey, Cyclops to a certain degree. Like, Jean Grey is way too old in my head now, even though I think Famke Janssen. Whenever I see her, I think Onatopp from GoldenEye. And I'm like, please squeeze me between your legs because you're so hot. Or can you and your daughter stop being kidnapped by Albanians? Been taken, you know, like, please, you know, like, the entire way. So, but this will kind of segue into the other ones. I think they could make, you know, Rogue, and here's a problem is that because the X-Men is Fox and Marvel Universe is like whatever, so Quicksilver is going to be in both franchises. Do you guys both know that?
Yes.
Okay, so. In the Age of Ultron, whatever that is, they can't call him a mutant because Fox owns that right.
Right.
So, but he will be Pietro, like, Maximoff or something
But they're miracles. That's what Thomas Clinchman says as whatever Baron Von whatever he is we're in the miracles.
Right. Which, it's so sad because, like, if you can have Quicksilver, then why can't you have Wolverine? Because Wolverine is kind of like the Marvel whore. He's kind of been in, like, every single franchise, you know, ever. So I would like to see some recasting. And then, of course, let's go ahead and segue into the next one. We'll kind of wrap up We'll wrap up Days of the Future Past at the end of this whole entire thing, but I want to see Gambit. So let's go ahead and talk about that for a second. So, Amy, let's get the female's perspective from this, you know? Like, what do you think about Channing Tatum, you know? He was in that movie Magic Mike, which is based on my biography.
Yeah, which I didn't see.
Yeah. You didn't see Magic Mike? Oh, yeah. So, I don't know if I told you, but I used to hoard up in Ybor by stripping for, like, ladies and, like, things. What do you think about that casting? Like, do you know much about the character at all?
I don't know a lot. Mike has told me it was your favorite character, so I'm excited that he gets some FaceTime in the upcoming one. You know, if you'd asked me a year ago, would I have seen him, and I would have said no, but there was a movie that came out last year that he was in, and most people don't, it's not, it doesn't even show up on most of his, I don't know, whatever you call it, filmography or whatever, because it was a very small role, but it was in This Is the End, I think, or At World's End.
Which
This Is the End, yes. And he plays like
the
dominatrix, and he's there like in the, you know, he's got the mask on and he's like down in like the, it was just great. And I'm like, I have a whole new appreciation for him that he would do that. Because I thought it was great. So I'm willing to watch anything he's in now. Because of that 2-minute segue that he did.
All right, Mike, what do you know about Gambit, and what do you think about the casting?
So my experience with Gambit is from you from 20 years ago when we were kids and you were showing me your comics and I didn't know what the hell was going on. And the Taylor Kitsch version from X-Men Origins, which I know you hated. But I really thought that the character looked really cool, just so completely underused. Maybe not as criminally underused as Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool was in that movie, because I do know anything about Deadpool. But
I think every single movie.
The character looks like a very rich, platform for very interesting movies. I assume they're going to do some kind of heist, something or other with him. But it just seems really interesting, and I guess Channing Tatum says he's going to do a Cajun accent with the role, which I think probably would work nicely with his origin, from what I understand. I'm more interested to understand what you think. He was not the person I had in mind, but I don't know the character like you do.
Yeah, ever since I grew up, you know, Gambit was like that shady. You didn't know why you hated him, you know, or like maybe you love to hate him or hate to love him, like all these other things. But he was certainly like the womanizer of the group, and in some ways, Rogue, you know, it's like that Southern girl, you know, as well. And obviously she can't touch it, but she's so there's such a potential dynamic between those two characters. You know, a lot of people were talking about doing Ken Tatum versus Tim Olyphant. And I thought Tim Olyphant would have done a great job. He certainly has an accent. The problem is that he's too old. The character of Gambit has been able to actually, he would obviously get defeated by Wolverine, I think, in the end, but he can pretty much give Wolverine, like, a good fight. Like, he's on that level. He's not, there's nothing super about the guy. It's just basically, like, the lessons that he's kind of picked up. His power is to basically take, like, any object, and here's what their explanation is. It's basically charge the kinetic energy inside the card, so like if you throw it and it hits like something, it'll basically explode. So almost like you can charge like the molecule. So I think the way that's supposed to introduce him is that you have Age of Apocalypse or Apocalypse whatever, and then afterwards we'll get his standalone movie. And that kind of brings me to the next subject is, I like the idea of bringing these comic characters and trying different genres with them. So I think a Thief one would work really, really well. So, Amy, what did you like as far as X-Men First Class taking place in the 1960s and then this one kind of taking place in the 70s? More as like period pieces. Like, did you feel that you weren't watching comic movies because they were trying to emphasize a time period so much, like a different genre? Did that work out for you? Or
It didn't bother me.
Didn't bother you, kind of.
Because
I think it's a hard dynamic, you know. Like, my Captain America was certainly more of an espionage, like kind of thing. I think like overall movies, maybe shouldn't be afraid to branch out to be a different type of movies. Like they don't have to be superhero movies, you know, with like a classic villain, like whatever.
Right.
and have like in the end. So anyway, but like, I think the character has a lot of potential if they don't mess him up. Let's go through this real quick. Let's take all the 7 X-Men movies and let's talk about the one character that they actually just was totally underused. So let's start off with the first X-Men that came back in the day. I'm going to go ahead and say Sabretooth, because that's Wolverine's mortal enemy, and he basically came off like a grunting person. Does anyone remember much about the first movie or no?
I don't remember.
Gosh dang it. Mike, do you remember the first movie? Do you remember the character underutilized in that one?
You know, I've always... What's going on with
this? What's going on with this?
You guys hear an echo?
Yeah.
No.
You just had good. It's fine.
It's awesome. Project your voice.
How about now?
I'm fine.
I heard you say how about now.
Yep.
Okay, so.
Mike, how are we doing on time, by the way? Where are we at right now? Could you repeat that one more time? What? Mike, where are we for time?
We've been in for about an hour.
Okay. Jesus. So bad. All right, keep going. All right, Mike, stop messing with audio settings before
podcast. I'm trying to figure out why I'm getting an artifact.
An artifact?
Yeah, the radio.
It hasn't happened until just now. Oh. What a... I'm gonna keep talking about something comic related, so people, so this doesn't come into you know, our other podcast, audio and visual hour with Amy, Mike, and Richie. You know, we won't segue into that one like quite yet. So, let's go ahead. So you know, again, I encourage everyone to go watch the movie. Great for what it is. Overall, I'm gonna go ahead and say that I gave it out of, if you give it like a 5, like a, you know, whatever, I actually gave it a 3.5. I think there was a lot of potential that they got wrong, though the movie was really, really awesome as a standalone movie. The continuities and underutilizing of characters was just kind of made it ho-hum. I mean, there are great sequences, and I get why the things that they did, but overall, I think you should definitely go see it, you know, for the sake of, you know, seeing like an X-Men movie. But for those who are diehard comic book fans, I don't know if you necessarily agree with some of the liberties that they took. So, how about you, Mike?
I gave it a four. I enjoyed it. I thought it worked really well for me. I think people should go see it. I think they'll enjoy it. We went in 3D. I don't know if you did. You could ask Amy. But I didn't. I don't think the 3D was really necessary. Are you getting really weird sound?
Nope.
You totally sound like it's like a frog voice after your real voice.
Do you hear that, Richie?
Whatever it is that you guys are experiencing, I am not experiencing.
That's awesome. Well, hopefully it's not recording that way. It appears like it's gone now. Amy, is it gone for you?
Yeah, I don't hear it anymore.
Okay, so that's great. So I'm gonna cut that part. So I gave it a 4. I think it was really enjoyable. I thought it was a pretty good story. I think there were some issues, particularly I thought that the future world was not as well developed as it could have been. I thought there were some missed opportunities. We saw it in 3D. I don't know. I didn't feel like you needed to see it in 3D. I don't think it gave you really anything that much. The Sentinels were kind of interesting, but it certainly wasn't. It's not like it was Gravity where you really have to see it in 3D.
Right. How about you, Amy? What do you think overall? Must see.
I would definitely recommend it to pretty much anyone. I think it's an enjoyable movie. You know, even if you're not a comic book fan or real familiar with the other X-Men, I think, you know, it's a fun movie. The humor I thought was great, which is a derision from some of the original trilogy. Now, First Class had some humor in it too. Between the characters, and so I like that. I would probably give it a 4 as well. But I would put it up there as one of the top, right, you know, as the top. Well, probably, it would probably be, I think, the best that I've seen. Now, I haven't seen, well, I watched Wolverine, the one that just came out last year, but it was a slight, it was while other things were going on, so I can't say that I actually was fully focused on it, but I'd say it's probably the top one for me.
Okay. Mike, did you just turn off my camera?
No.
That was so odd. Anyway, I definitely think everyone should go see it. It's really, you know, who knows where they're going to go with, like, the franchise, but as long as they keep compelling us, making interesting stories, and put Quicksilver in, I'll be all about it. So, all right, guys, before we wrap this up a little bit, let's go ahead and talk about maybe some of the other things on the horizon, like, real quick. Batman vs. Superman got a title. Do you like it? Does it make sense to you?
It's weird. It's a weird title. I don't understand it. I don't know why it's like that. It doesn't make any sense to me. I understand they're trying to, talk about the Justice League movie, which is obviously coming next. But I thought it was supposed to be Man of Steel 2. I understood the Batman versus Superman thing, but I feel like I don't trust them because I didn't think Man of Steel story was that great. I think they're going to mess it up big time. We'll see. It feels like they're going to do everything that was wrong with Spider-Man 2 and Iron Man 2. I think that's going to be like the majority of this movie. That's what I feel like we're going to get. So hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised.
How about you, Amy? Did you get a chance to see like the new suit online and everything? Like, what do you think about the look of like where they're trying to go?
You know, I did see a couple pictures that went up. With the Batmobile in the background and him in the foreground, and I didn't really focus, but I've never really focused on the suit because they all look. Batman's always been a little cheesy for me, so the suits have always been a little over the top. But I don't know. To me, that's not the thing I really focus on. But I'm not super excited about it. I'm not a huge Batman fan, anyways. I thought that the Nolan Batmans were great, and so you know I'll definitely see it, but. You know, the original Batman, so I was never really a big fan of storyline. So, but mm-hmm. I did like Man of Steel. Same thing for Superman. Superman's never been one of the ones that I thought was entertaining. I always thought it was just over the top and just cheesy and never a big fan. But I did like Man of Steel, so I'll definitely see it, but I don't have real high hopes for it.
I think... I feel bad for the city of men or Metropolis in the movie. I mean, they've been just, like, they really fucked up that city, like, a lot. Like, that's a lot of damage. I didn't think it was pointy, as they say, the other thing. So, I don't know, like, what they're trying to do. I think they're getting it more right on the TV. And I encourage you guys to kind of finish up watching Arrow. We'll go ahead and see that for like the next podcast. I want you guys to like really catch up on Arrow because I don't want to start talking about Flash until we actually start talking about like what it's getting right, you know, as far as kind of TV landscape in like my head. So, Mike, what's our next movie that we are coming up on the rest of the summer here?
Next, you know, I don't know. We were talking about this the other day or yesterday. I can't remember. I mean, How to Train Your Dragon is probably the next one that I'm really like super duper excited for.
Sure.
But let me pull up. Maleficent is up next, and A Million Ways to Die in the West, which is fun. Oh, Edge of Tomorrow comes out in 2 weeks. I think that's going to be pretty good.
Which one's Edge of Tomorrow?
That's the one with Tom Cruise where it's kind of like Groundhog Day meets.
Oh, my God. Didn't they do a movie like that already? What's the one with Jake Gyllenhaal?
I'm not sure, but it looks it's gotten pretty good reviews so far. And then in 3 weeks is How to Train Your Dragon 2, which for me is the next big one. But then starting at the end of June, there is basically a big movie every week and from the last week in June through the end of August.
Right. Amy, popping up the same time as How to Train Your Dragon 2 is going to be 22 Jump Street. I don't know if you saw 21 Jump Street at all.
I saw it about 2 weeks ago.
You saw it 2 weeks ago for the first time?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, Mike, did you see that too?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, I can't, like, Amy, real quick, we'll talk about, like, Channing Tatum is hilarious in that movie. Like, you know, you see him do, like, some trying to be, like, serious stuff. There's actually a new movie coming out with him and Steve Carell, based on the, I think it was a wrestler, like, and his coach and his brother that, like, oh, gosh, I need to look this up real quick. It's gotten a lot of, like, rave reviews if you guys haven't gotten a chance to see it. It's a movie called Foxcatcher. So definitely go see that. That's gonna, huh?
I've seen previews for that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an excellent movie. And then, but of course, 21 Jump Street is comedic timing, Mike. I mean, some of it is just plain silly. I don't know, Amy, if you thought he was hilarious like in that movie.
I thought it was great. I mean, it's certainly slapstick, but I thought it was I thought it was gonna be ridiculously bad, and that's why I never saw it. But I kept hearing things about it, and then it was on TV, and I was like, oh, I'll watch it. And I laughed. So, you know, rarely do I laugh out loud.
I was pleasantly surprised about that movie as well. So, all right, guys, those are like the big ones. And then, of course, we got Transformers, and I can't wait for Guardians of the Galaxy to kind of come around.
You can contact us on Twitter at @ExitTheDonut or our email, ExitTheDonutPodcast@gmail.com. Our website, exitthedonut.wordpress.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Google+. Thanks for listening. Catch you next time.